Welcome everyone to our new series that we're beginning, which we've called The 8 Dayers. It's based on the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, which I bumped into this book about something like 12 years ago, maybe 13 years ago. I found it in my parents' house and I just asked my dad if I could borrow it. And it was the first time that immediately as I finished the book, I just opened it again from the first page. I had never reread a book at that point. I hardly read at all. And as I finished it, I just went right back to the beginning and started again. And it changed my life. The reason why we're sitting here with me today is because of that book. That book flipped my life, literally. It basically brought me back to life. That's what I feel that book did. It basically brought me back to life. And so what I've done over the past, however long I've been looking at this book, for 12 years or so, I've really, really put a lot of energy into this book. And recently, about a year or so ago, I kind of Jewed it up, if you want to say like that. I made it a little more Jewish. And I modified it a teeny little bit. And I turned it into eight. I called it 8 Dayers as opposed to 7 Habits. But it's basically the same thing. The adjustments are quite minor. It's basically, the goal is to teach us how to be human. Like, what makes the difference between an animal? What's the difference in an animal and a human being? So this is what this book is. This is what this course is trying to help us become. It's trying to help us understand what it means to be human. And we can't take that for granted, because a lot of us live by a default program, which is basically what animals do. It might look more elevated. It might look might look a little higher. But without conscious kind of holding the reins of our life, without us directing our life, as long as we're being directed by our life, we are not a true human being. And this class is dedicated, Bezrat Hashem, to helping us understand what it means to be human and to do it, to really become it. So it's broken down, we've said, into 8 days. Okay, we'll explain in a minute what a day is. The first 4 days are basically we've called between man and himself. Okay, and the second 4 days, 5 to 8, are between man and another man, woman, between the human being and himself, and between the human being and his fellow. Okay. I'm going to read you these. I'm going to read you. I'll send you a link to the end of this, or you'll probably have to get in touch with me for the, or maybe I'll just put it in the chat right now, actually. One moment. Chat. I think it's on my, yes. There you go. Okay. So you can look at this. Look at this. The 8 days, we're going to say them in English. They have got Hebrew translations, or really the English is a translation for the Hebrew. Number one is called live life. Number two is called be humble. Number three is called clarify your mission. Number four is see then now. Number five, when we begin between man and his fellow, what you hate, don't do to others. Number six is the mutual success mindset. Number seven is first be silent, then speak. And number eight is harmonize. Okay, you can look in the sheet that I just sent. You can see the Hebrew then. It's all nice and cute, and enjoy it. But the first thing we have to clarify is, what is a daya? So a daya comes from the Hebrew to know, das. And it says that Adam yada es chava, that's the Hebrew word for relations. The biblical word for relations is daya, is to know. What dea means is that it's when a piece of information becomes one with you. You could also call that a habit, but that's more on like a practical level. But a dea is when you do the right things that we'll talk about as well to share, and at the right frequency and the right intensity, that things that you know actually become merged with who you are. So it's like the difference between quoting something and, well, like whoever, you know, when somebody asks you, when you give over some kind of you know, sum that you learned when you were a kid, you'd never dream of quoting your primary school teacher when you're explaining to somebody that, you know, 2 times 2 equals 4. Why? Because you're one with that knowledge. You live your life in the world of 2 times 2 equals 4. That's part of your world. That's part of who you are. That's just something that you know. So there's a lot of ideas that if you apply yourself to them, they become one. For example, the idea of everything is here for me. My goal is to help. That's a knowledge. That's a piece of information. The idea of I'm here to help. How can I be of service? Now I could quote, you could quote me later on. You could go home and say, or turn around to somebody and say that Shmuel said that we're here to help. Great. But when you do the right actions and the right, and like I said, with the right intensity and the right frequency, and you go over it again and again and again and again and again, and you act in ways that solidify that you're here to help. Now that just becomes your, that just becomes who you are. And just like when you get in the car and you don't consciously think about, you do the indicator, you're doing the gears, you're looking in the mirrors, you don't think about anything. In fact, a lot of the times you'll get in your car and then in half an hour later, you're home and you don't even know what happened. Like, how did I just get home? I have no recollection of that journey whatsoever. That's because you and driving is so one. And that's what we're trying to get to with good, wholesome, healthy, and holy ideas. And that's what this class is really about. So it's called the 8 Dayas. And what that means, like we said, is that we're gonna try and embody these ideas. That is called a paradigm. A paradigm is like a set of glasses. So if my glasses were pink, now, as I look out over the world, I would be seeing a pink world. A lot of people have red glasses. So everything to them is very angry. And they look at the world and everything's very angry. That's what a paradigm is. Some people have blue, like nice, subtle blue glasses. So everything is very peaceful. Everything's very relaxed. Everything is manageable. I can deal with everything. This is what a dea leads to. A dea, in practical terms, is called a paradigm, and it's a worldview, it's a way that we see the world, and that's only because it's become one with you. If something isn't of you, it's just something that you've heard and you quote it, then you don't see the world like that. The only way you see the world like that is when you've really merged with that information. Okay, so we're going to go through now. We're going to try and go through all of the 8 days and explain quickly what these are. And you'll understand them. They're really not difficult to understand at all. But don't be fooled into thinking that anything's really happened, because the actual way of embodying and becoming these ideas is not a quick, there's no quick fix here. There is literally no quick fix. These ideas have to be gone over again and again and again. And don't be fooled by how simple they are, because like I said, there's no quick fix to this. There's no quick fix to becoming a effective or choshev person, you could say in Hebrew, to becoming a choshev person. So I've called this the 8 Dayas, and the subtitle is A Jewish Guide to Being Human. Just as a side point, this class isn't about being Jewish. This class is about being human. Being Jewish is a different class, but this class is about being human. Okay, so live life. The first day, which in Hebrew is called Bechata Bechayim, okay, choose life, live life. That means don't be lived by life. That means, in the words of Stephen Covey, is be proactive as opposed to reactive. See, when you hear proactive, people hear proactive, they think of like a person, a go-getter, someone's out there going and, doing his thing, a businessman, some kind of politician, whatever it is. Yeah, he's proactive. But really, proactive doesn't mean that. Proactive means the opposite of reactive. Reactive is what an animal does. Something happens and it reacts. And if you knew all the variables, that animal would do the same thing again and again and again and again and again. And that's the beginning of everything. That's why it's the first day, because you have to know that you are in control. If you give up control, if you feel that you're out of control, if you feel that you're being controlled by life as opposed to in control of your life, then there's nothing doing. There's no game to be played. You're being played by the game. So the first step, the beginning of everything, is live life. Don't be lived by life. You have to decide what you're going to do, how you're going to be, how you're going to behave, how you're going to react. When something happens, it's interesting because people think, like you've heard, you'd hear people just say, "I got so angry, I couldn't control myself." Yeah, you could imagine someone saying that to you. But say to that person, "Listen, you were really angry. Yeah, I hear that. You were much crazy angry. And you were just before you did that thing, which was out of control, someone pops out from behind a tree and says, here's £1,000 to not do that, or $10,000, whatever you're holding. You think you'd be able to not do what you did?" The chances are the person would not do what he did. Why? Because really we are in control, and it's a choice that we make. It's a choice that we make to act in a certain way. Or should I say, it's that we've given up the choice to actually choose the right thing. That's what it means. That's what it means, live life. The first level is that you have to decide that you are the balabais. You are the one who is making the decisions, and the decisions are not making you. This is predicated on what Covey calls the space between stimulus and response. There's a little space between stimulus and response, which means when someone does something to you or something happens to you, now an animal immediately reacts and there's no space between there. As we can create a space between what happens to us and how we react, that's this idea of living life. That little gap between your spouse said this thing to you and you're like, "Ugh." If you can, your spouse can say that same thing to you. If you can pause and be in that gap, create a little silent gap. Now you can choose how you're going to respond as opposed to react. You can proact as opposed to react. So live life. Bechata Bechaim is the first level. That's the first thing. Okay. The second day is called be humble. Anybody has a definition of humility? What does it mean to be humble? Silence.
To be humble is to put others in, needs maybe ahead of your own.
So can you, that's good, but can you be humble then if there's no one around?
Can you be humble if nobody's around? You can be humble because you do not make yourself the center of the universe, but if nobody else is around, I guess you are the center of the universe.
So what you're saying, let me, I think you, I think you nailed it, basically, I think. I'm just going to say it in different words. Humble means you don't have a wall around you. Arrogant means that you've erected a wall around you. The more arrogant a person is, the higher, the stronger, the thicker the wall is. The more he feels separate from everybody. A humble person is available. A humble person is available. His borders are down, which means he is available to learn. He's available to grow. He's not defined. Because once I'm defined, then, well, I'm X. Don't try and make me be Y, or don't even try. And in fact, you're going to teach me Y, but I'm X. So I'm going to work it out that I'm going to change X. I'm going to change Y into X. That's arrogant. An arrogant person hears something and he fits it into everything that he's known previously. A humble person hears something new and they change. They become new. They become a new person. So that's why humility is the second layer, because it's essential. It's essential for the growth to take place. First, you have to know that you're available that there's a person there to grow. Now you have to be available to growth. So first is live life. I'm in control. And second is be humble, meaning I'm now available to actually receive and to become a new person. That's a it's very rare, actually. It might not think it is, but that true humility is incredibly rare. Everyone's so desperately erecting walls around themselves because there's so much insecurity. They erect these walls around themselves, and they become unavailable to something new. They become everything just becomes, well, how's it going to enhance what I already am? Because I'm not courageous enough to say that what I was wasn't enough, and now I need to go to the next stage. So that's humility. Be humble. Okay, the third layer is clarify your mission. Stephen Covey calls this start with the end in mind. Clarify your mission. See, if you don't know what you're here for, then it's like starting a business. Imagine a guy starts a business and you turn around to him and say, "So what are you, what are you doing?" And he's like, "I don't really know. We're gonna see. Like, I got this, I bought a shop, and we'll see what happens. Let's see which direction it goes in." Like, what? How can you do that? That's the same with life. If you don't have a big picture of what we're here to do, then how can you actually do it? Or how can you do anything? You're just going to be flitting from one side to the other side. There'll be no cohesion. So that leads to the fourth one, which is see then now. Now, this is really where we put into practice the mission. Okay, once we know what we're here to do and we've got that clear, we have to actually become that mission. That's what my Rebbe said, is the idea of transitioning from being connected to what you are to being connected to why you are. Once you've transitioned into being aligned with why you are as opposed to what you are, that is see then now. That's what Stephen Covey called first things first, meaning you're being led by your mission. Once you've got your, for example, yeah, I'm going to give a bad example, a schnorrer, a beggar, yeah, who's been doing it for years and years and years, yeah. And he's become a beggar. And I've said to people before, it's okay to beg, but it's not okay to become a beggar. Okay, it's okay to schnorr, but it's not okay to become a schnorrer. So you meet people occasionally who've become schnorrers, meaning they've been begging for so long that their whole essence is schnorrer. So when you see them, the first thing they do is they put their hand out to you. Or if they meet someone new, the first thing they do, or anything that's happening, everything's about, well, how can I get the money? How can I get the money? Maybe I have to be really nice to this guy. Maybe I have to tell him he's fantastic. Maybe I have to buy him a gift. Maybe I have to just beg, whatever it is. But my whole being is being dictated, or my, not my whole being, my being is dictating how I'm acting. That's the fourth daya, meaning that you've clarified your mission. You know what you're here to do. And now you've absorbed that mission so deeply that your mission is now directing your entire world. So let's imagine that a person defined his mission as, I'm here to improve the world. That's what I'm here for. Let's say that he defined his mission as, I'm here to improve the world. Now, if he or she becomes that, they go over the idea again and they actually embody that idea. Now you'll realize that wherever they are, that's what they're going to be trying to do. They're going to be trying to improve the world. That's the fourth level. That's the fourth level, is implementing the mission that you've discovered, that you've understood what you are. And everybody knows their mission. We're going to work out, B'ezrat Hashem, we'll do some exercises that will help us understand what our mission, exactly what our mission is. And we all know what our mission is. All of us know exactly what our mission is. We just need to uncover it. We need to clarify it. But it's there for all of us to know. That once we've discovered what our mission is, now the next stage, like we just said, is to actually become that. And to have that mamash move your entire direction in your life. Okay. So that's the beginning of Bein Adam LaAtzmo, which means between man and himself. If you want to have a healthy relationship with yourself, first you need to live life. You need to find that you are actually in charge of your life. You're the one living your life. Number two is to be humble, to let go of all the crazy shtick that protects us from change. After that, we have to clarify our mission. We have to work out what it is exactly that we're here for. And then once we've done that, we have to see then now, meaning that we need to be clear on where we're trying to get to such a place that that is going to inform all of our, or affect, or not affect, what's the word? Not inform, all of our actions. It's going to mold, whatever the word is, it's going to cause us to act in a certain way. That is called self-mastery. That is becoming a master of yourself, okay? That is between man and himself. That is the first 4 days, okay? The next 4 days are now between man and his fellow. So we've got, number one is, what you hate, don't do to others. That's what they call the golden rule. Number six is the mutual success mindset. That's what Stephen Covey called think win-win. Then we've got number seven, which is, first be silent, then speak. And number eight is harmonize, which we've called shalom bayis. That's the key to marriage. Okay. If we are successful in the first 4 days, then we are ready to have interpersonal success. Once we have personal success, now we can start having effective relationships with others. But before you have any kind of self-mastery, your relationships with others are going to be strained, to say the least, and sometimes disastrous. But we need to first become, yeah, Talia asking a question. You put up your hand, you're on mute. Talia Rose, you wanted to ask something? No? Okay. Until we've got some kind of mastery over ourselves, and really this is the key word, until we can trust ourselves, how can you be trusted by another? If you don't trust yourself, there is no way that you can be trusted by another. And this is really, you could define the first 4 dayas as coming to trust yourself, and the next 4 dayas as being trusted by others, which is really what a relationship is, being trusted by others. Trust is much more important than love, by the way, interestingly enough. The three most transformational words you can ever say to anyone is not "I love you," it's "I trust you." Those three words are absolutely transformational, absolutely transformational. And you know what? To be able to say that to yourself, you know what? I trust you. You'll be all right. You know what that's called? In modern psychological language, I trust myself.
Confidence.
Confidence. There's a holier way of saying it. Self-esteem. Self-esteem can be defined as I feel suitable for life. I can do this. I can do this. Not that I'm Guy Verdick, not that I think I'm the, but I can do this. I've been doing this for 40 years and I've been okay. And I feel that whatever Hashem throws at me, I will be okay, Bezrat Hashem. That's called trusting yourself. That is self-esteem. There's a book that I read called The 6 Pillars of Self-Esteem that he explains that very clearly, but that's a very beautiful working definition of self-esteem, is being able to trust yourself because you feel suitable for life. You feel that you have the right skills and talents and resources that will allow you to navigate through your life, which you do by definition, because everything's tailor-made to you. So once you've imbued yourself with once you've, so to speak, reclaimed sanity in a sense, reclaimed yourself, now we're ready to start working on how can I effectively interact with others. So what's the first step to having a relationship with another person? It's going to sound so funny, but I mean this. I'm so serious about this. The first, go on, what can anyone throw out? What do you think is the first thing that you have to know without any question to have a relationship with another person? What is the foundation of a relationship with another person?
Trust,
Before that.
that they're human people,
What?
that they're a human being.
Yes, that they exist. Thank you, Michael. That's the fact. Now that sounds like really like everyone's like, what are you talking about? Stupid. Of course I know they exist. No, not at all. That is not to be taken for granted. The amount of people that know that anybody else in the world exists are very few. I know that sounds very kind of pessimistic and down, but it's a real madrega. It's a real, the person has attained a level of holiness when he is real, she is genuinely appreciative of another person's existence. That doesn't mean you're appreciative, saying thank you and please and stuff. It means that you really understand that this person exists as his own thing, not in context of your life, but he's his own thing. He's as real as you are. That's really, really holy. That really is a very high level. So that is called what you hate, don't do to others. As Hillel said, "Da alayich sani l'chaver chloi savid." What is hateful to yourself, do not do to another. That's how we start accessing this level of appreciating that another person is real, is by understanding what we don't like, and never, ever, 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 ever doing it to somebody else, even in the most subtle, nuanced way. Never. Just like when, if you live in an apartment building, yeah, and you see somebody's taking their trash out And there's like one of those disgusting smelly lines of like some kind of liquid, because the, you know, you get that in Israel the whole time. You guys live in houses, so you don't see that. But in Israel, you get that whole time, yeah? And you're like, that's disgusting. I can't believe that person did it. And you, 3 days later, taking out the garbage, and you're like, ooh, quick, just quick, get out there. No one will see it. It'll be all right, yeah? Yeah, that needs to be worked out. There's madrigas and madrigas and madrigas, but the first level, the first experience of the first level of relationships with others is what you hate, don't do to others, which means recognize that that person is really a real person. And like I said, that is no small feat. Once you've done that, Bezrat Hashem, now how do you relate to them? And that is called the mutual success mindset. That's what Stephen Covey called think win-win. Now that I know that you're real, I want the best for you. I really, really want the best for you. That doesn't have to be at my expense at all. It's mutual success mindset. I want to be successful. I want you also to be successful. In fact, in the same, it's because I want my success that I want your success. And your success is as important to me as my success. And then when we get into a relationship now, it's about win-win. I want you to be successful. I want me to be successful. It's not about beating you in any way. It's not about manipulating you in any way. It's not about getting the better of you. It's not about taking from you. But at the same time, it's not about you walking all over me. It's not about you taking advantage of me. It's not about me becoming a pawn in your game. It takes courage. That's called mutual success mindset. Think win-win. I want to be successful and I want you to be successful. But I'm not prepared to not be successful. And you know what? I'm not prepared for you not to be successful. We're both going to win. That is absolutely essential to me. That's what this day is about. That it's about both of us winning. Mutual success mindset. Now, how do you do that? That's the seventh day. First, be silent, then speak. So silence is, how do you call it? Something that connects something. What's the word in science when something connects something to something else? I can't think of the word. It allows something to pass from one thing to another.
Catalyst?
Sorry?
A catalyst?
Not catalyst, no. I actually thought that word as well. It's something that allows A to pass to B. So blood brings oxygen to the limbs of the body. Yeah? That's what blood, that's the primary fact. It does other stuff as well. But the primary function of blood is that it gets pumped through the lungs, yeah, and it aerates, it receives all the oxygen in the lungs, and then it gets pumped through the entire body, bringing oxygen to the cells in your fingertips and your toenails as well, yeah, the tips of your toes. Yeah, that's what blood does. So blood is a conduit. Maybe that's a conduit to bring oxygen to the limbs of your body. What's the word for blood in Hebrew? Dam. Dam. Actually, it's interesting. In English, dam also means silent, doesn't it? Deaf and dumb. That means silence. Wow, that's really interesting. That's really, really nice. So dam in Hebrew also means doimem or damima, which is silence, like it does in English. That's really nice. I just realized that. So dam, blood, which allows the oxygen to be transferred into the bone, into all the physical parts of the body, is the same word as silence. Silence allows what you say to be received by me. And that doesn't mean a silence of the mouth. That means a true inner silence. And we'll discuss the different levels of listening, but the way that, well, there's listening with the intent to reply, which basically means you don't care about the other person at all. You just want to speak and you'll just listen to them so that you can speak. They don't exist at all. Then there's the next level, which a lot of people think is listening. That's called analytical listening, where you're listening, but you are analyzing, comparing, contrasting, preferring, disliking, loving, hating, connecting. Your brain is going like that, yeah? That's also not true listening. It's better than waiting to speak, but it's not true listening. Why? Because there's an internal noise. True listening is silence. True listening is not analyzing what they're saying. It's hearing what they're saying. The analyzing can come later, but it's a true silence. And you'll see this when somebody's telling you something, and like as a man, our primary our default position is to analyze and to problem solve and to, you know, to provide, you know, answers to fix people. But you'll know if you've been married for, you know, even a small amount of time, is that if you are actually able to shut up and allow your spouse to just say what they want to say and actually be internally quiet, that usually fixes everything within a few moments. Doesn't even take like more than 30 seconds of true, genuine inner silence. That's really the relationship. So the first level is you have to know that they exist. The next step is wanting their success like you want your success and wanting your success like you want their success. The third level, which we said is first be silent, then speak, is where the actual relationship really starts to become a real relationship. But notice it's first be silent, then speak, meaning the point of the relationship is that you're there for them, but you also have to be giving as well. So there's first be silent, then speak, okay? And then that will lead to what we call harmonize, which Stephen Covey calls synergize, which I, in Hebrew, I've called shalom bayis, which is really when everything's in place, you now appreciate that your spouse is a real being. You are equally concerned with your success as you are with their success. And now you're actually listening. Yeah, now shalom bayis can flourish and you will become two complementary pieces of a puzzle. And in the words of Stephen Covey, that is 1 + 1 = 3. Meaning that when you and your wife are, or your wife, where, or when a spouse and their, when a husband and wife, a wife and a husband are harmonizing with, have put everything into place, as we just said before, then comes harmony and you become two sides of the same coin, two complementary sides of the same coin. You maintain your individuality, but it's like you're times by her and she's times by you. So instead of having 1 + 1 = 2, you have 1 + 1 = 3. That's the difference between an orchestra and a solo. Or when you've got a bunch of violins all playing together compared to when you've got a whole different array of musical instruments, it's obviously a much more beautiful sound when we've got an entire orchestra playing together, because the differences together harmonize, and now we've got a much more complex, much more sophisticated music in front of us. So that's the 8 days. Okay, we'll just quickly recap and then we'll finish. Live life. Bechat Bechayim means you are in control and you have to take control and you have to take responsibility for your own life. That's the first step. Number two, be humble, which we said, bakshu another, that's in Hebrew, seek humility, which means let go of this need to define yourself. Be available to redefinition. Okay, number three, clarify your mission, which is machoy vasoy bo'olamoy, what is your obligation in this world? get that very clear. The getting it clear means that eventually you see then now, Roya es Hanoilad, which means you have become your mission. You and your mission are inseparable with each other. You know what that's similar to? That's similar to a protein. And proteins are like little, they're like little, like messengers in your body, yeah, that are created by a certain formation of, let's just call it letters, like amino acids. And what their name is what they do. It's amazing. That's really called a malach, an angel. Is what its name is what it does. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get so clear on our purpose in this world that we become our purpose. That we become our purpose. Once we're in that world of super effectiveness on a personal level, now we're able to jump into the next level, which is healthy interactions with others. The first one is what you hate, don't do to others. Which means basically appreciate the existence of another human being. They really are real. They don't exist in context of your life. They exist in their own context. That's a big one. Once you've done that, now you can work on your mutual success mindset, which we've called v'ahavta l'recha kamoicha, meaning just like I want to be successful, I want you to be successful. Love your neighbor as yourself. V'ahavta l'recha kamoicha. Yeah, my success and your success are both equally important to me. And then we've got the very heilige level of first be silent, then speak, which we've called sayeg l'chochma shtika. A fence for wisdom is silence. Yeah. That is allowing the other person to enter into your world. And they will feel that more than you. You will feel a deep gratitude for allowing that to happen, but they will feel like, oh, thank God. I just was able to let that go. That's amazing. That's why people spend a lot of money on therapists. It's and if you were to record the amount of time of the one being therapied by the therapist who speaks longer, yeah, I would imagine you'd probably end up at probably a 90%, 10%. All people want to do is they just want to talk. They just want to be received by another. So that's first be silent, then speak, and then harmonize. That means that shalom bias. That will be when your personal relationships, not just with your wife or with your husband, but when your relationships with everyone will just become so much more, with your children, with your friends, with your work, with your employees, with your employer, with everyone, with your students, with your rebbes, with whoever it is. Yeah, every relationship just becomes so much more than what it is without these things in place. So over the next 8 weeks, Bezrat Hashem, we will go through each one in detail. And we will try and, in Hebrew, we say koine these ideas, which means basically become these ideas. And hopefully it will be good for everyone. Bezrat Hashem. Any questions?
No, thank you.
My pleasure. I got it wrong. Okay, call to everybody.
Thank you, Reb Shmuel. It was great. Looking forward to the next one.